Welcome to Tech Bytes, a 15-minute conversation on new and emerging ideas and technologies. Today's sponsor is Arista Networks, and we're talking about Cloud EOS. That's the latest announcement from Arista. Our guest is Doug Gourlay. He is VP and General Manager of the Cloud Networking Software Unit at Arista Networks. Doug, welcome back to the podcast, and kick us off with the high-level details. What is Cloud EOS?
Certainly. Thank you so much for having us back. Cloud EOS is a full, capable, normal instance of EOS that runs in one of two solution areas. First, multi-cloud, and the second is as a cloud-native solution. In multi-cloud, it's packaged as a virtual machine that can be bought and paid for and instantiated through the major cloud marketplaces in an on-demand model. In the cloud-native one, it's a container, and it runs a container network interface.
So that means I can now run EOS, which is the same operating system that you run on the switches. That's a big thing about Arista, is I'm running the same operating system everywhere I go.
Yes. You can run the same OS in the public cloud as you run in an on-premises data center, which makes interconnecting those a heck of a lot easier, as well as drives operational consistency for a NetOps team. It's like, hey, how do I do more with less, or how do I do more with the same team I have? Right. And getting that consistency helps people.
Now, you said you were running that in a container. Is that then as a router and you've got the BGP and the EVPN capabilities that you would expect, or is there something specific about the functionality of that?
Yeah, let's break the two down. In the multi-cloud environment, we're running as a VM because we are the forwarding plane, and we've used DPDK to enhance that forwarding plane to drive the performance up, keep the scale high, so on. In the containerized world, we're running as effectively the control plane. Right. So we are using BGP, adding EVPN, can do IPsec and fancy things like that, packet captures coming, all that kind of stuff in this container network interface. And it provides a consistent control plane. The forwarding plane is the Linux kernel, right? So we're sending signal. Like, the main problem this solves in the container network interface world is when somebody wants to scale out the number of Kubernetes hosts that they have. They're like, the DevOps team's like, I need to grow from 50 hosts to 200 as we scale out this environment. Like, okay, go. So they start plugging hosts in, and they start connecting them to top of rack switches. And then they go, hey, network guy, like, I've got a BGP peer with you to advertise the /32 or /128 routes that are resident on this node up into the network. And so let me, establish my BGP peering session. I'm setting it up in, my container world. I'm fast and quick and awesome. And the network guy goes, yeah. About that. See, there's other things on there. So we need to change control, and I'll put you in queue and I'll get to it. It's in my ITSM. I think in a couple of weeks. And the number one question, like, to kind of hit the core pain point I think most people are experiencing in this cloud world, DevOps world from the network lens, is these DevOps guys are like, go fast, break things. We're cool. We fix in software. And the network guy's like, the blast radius of this is my entire network. Please don't screw it up. They're like, no, I'm just going to roll out this IP address. You're like, that's the core ERP system and system of record that the entire network and the entire business runs on. Please don't overlap it. Right. And so the change control and the change management process in the networking team often takes days to weeks. And the DevOps team,
it's not very cloudy, but that's the reality. We talk about cloud as though some mass magic has happened to our processes, but it hasn't. For most organizations, the answer is it's still very ITIL, still very job focused, queue-centric, approval, review, approve, act sort of thing.
Exactly.
And that sort of consistency is exactly what you need to help get you through that process, because you've got to be able to stand there and lie to the change board that it's going to work.
Well, and then we sit there and we go, automation's the answer, man. We're going to automate. And we're like, well, what are we automating? And the change board, we're going to review this for the change board. How did you test? Can you tell me how you tested every one of those individual 17 new hosts you're bringing online, peering with a Tor? You test in prod. And that's what you do in networking. You plug it in. You pray. You hope it doesn't screw something else up. If it does, you unplug it rapidly. You make your configuration changes. If that screws something up, you hopefully can do a commit confirm and roll it back quickly. Hmm. You test in prod, and so the blast radius is high, so we're afraid.
First thing, I love how you're voicing the dev person as a surfer dude. That's good. The second thing is...
So I live in San Diego. What do you expect? Con's going over there down the street.
That's right. The idea is then what I'm giving the network person is hooks into this developer environment where they can set up essentially the networking guardrail so the developers can go and provision all these hosts, but I know on the networking side that it's not going to have a blast radius that stretches into the ERP system.
Exactly right. And then you use the analogy I always try to use is like, how do we do cloud with guardrails? When I have guardrails in a racetrack and on cliff edges, I feel a lot more comfortable so I can go faster. Let's let the DevOps team go faster than they've ever gone before, because the network will respond to the changes they make automatically, yet like stay in the lane and not mess up, right? Like if you try to overlap the core ERP system, it will say no. if I want to prod, it should automatically connect.
I like to think of it as prevention rails, because I also want to define what features they can use and what features they can't use. I also want to have controls that they don't do weird stuff, because developers sometimes get these ideas about networking, which are, well, dangerous, right? They might read a blog post that some company that has, you know, no relevance to the modern, you know, to a traditional enterprise network infrastructure, and come up with these crazy, like, that's right, that's fine for Google ideas, you know, in inverted commas, and get it done. I think the other issue that we want to talk about here is segmentation, because I really think segmentation is a big deal. We're seeing it all over the place. Meshes, service meshes, multi-cloud, hybrid cloud, in the data center, there's overlays everywhere. What about EOS and the private segmentation there?
Absolutely, Greg. So let me start with, I think, I'm not going to pick on any particular vendor, but for who you wish. We as an industry really screwed our clients over, because increasingly our clients want a simple environment, right? The challenge is, how do I do more with less? We're not exactly getting lots more engineering people. Couple that with, I have a supply side economics issue. There's just not enough great new talented people graduating from college going, I can't wait to be a network engineer. And we're slightly aging as a population. I mean, pointing out my head full of gray hair in the networking community. And so it's not like there's, you know, great network engineers are growing on trees with 10 or 15 or 20 years of experience in operating these kind of, you know, relatively complex distributed systems. So I have that challenge. And I take that and I'm like, okay, how do I enable things to be simpler? Why did we create a segmentation model as an industry that has one model in the branch, another model over the WAN, another model in the campus, another model in the data center, another model in the cloud, another model in the container and VM environment? By the way, the majority of which from the leading vendors are proprietary and non-interoperable. This makes zero sense to me. It's like, why can't I take a single global segmentation model that stays in its lane, and tries to do its job and not try to do everybody else's job, and use open standard industry well-established protocols like BGP, VXLAN, IPsec, and let's enable this to work in the container world, in the cloud world, in the campus, in the data center. Now, that doesn't mean, like, you could. I think it's stupid for somebody to say, I'm going to take the exact same segment called prod and put it in my branch, my campus, my data center, my cloud. That's like a really dumb design. But why does my network operator, who has to troubleshoot and debug this, need to know five different technologies and how they all link together, if they even link together, if I can actually route from one to the other, and which control point manages which piece? How are they expected to deal with that complexity? Why can't we simplify this down to a normal operating model? And so that's what we did. We said, let's build a single segmentation model that can work across any of the environments at great scale, at reasonable granularity, and then trust that there are other systems out there that do things more granular where they can be applied.
So speaking of operations, I'm presuming then that this cloud EOS, all these instances I can manage through CloudVision, which is your management platform?
Exactly. In fact, let me just kind of describe how I would deploy cloud EOS. Okay, so if I wanted to deploy cloud EOS and my DevOps team says, Doug, we need 150 virtual private clouds, 50 are in Amazon, 50 are in Azure, 50 are in Google, there are multiple regions, and I need you to build the network that interconnects all of them with IPsec, with active key rotation, at high performance. By the way, I want it elastically scaled up and scaled down, so I only pay for what I actually use, or as close to it as possible. Please, networking team, go build that. I mean, just roughly, what unit of measure would you use to describe the networking team responding to that with how long it would take? Just give me a rough one.
Eons.
Eons. There's a lot. Well, there's a lot to open up here, right? If you're going to try and predict this, the challenge that we have for many of us is we try and predict all of this as if it's a certainty, or that it's going to be this way, or that we need this many of a thing. And a lot of us think in terms of physical stuff, like, I know I need this many switches, or I need this much capacity, and once I've got a number for capacity, I go and buy this. But in the cloud, it's all different, right? Because you need to get into a situation where there's an infinite number of possible switches. So what you're really focused on is the services and the process of instantiating and de-instantiating. And that's the key driver here, right? And to me, you when you go into the cloud, this is where you start to, and this also applies in private clouds, by the way. If you're into VMs and you know the more traditional fixed virtualization, all of these things begin to apply in a private cloud as much as they do the public cloud or the off-premise cloud.
Absolutely, but I think, right, Greg.
Right, and that's the but having it standardized, there's so much of this where there's companies out there saying we do it this way in the public cloud, but we do it that way in the private cloud, or we do it this way in the hybrid.
Why do they need to be different?
Yeah, I don't. Let me ask you
a very challenging assumption. Why can't I use the exact same Amazon APIs I use to provision some public cloud instances I have to create enterprise virtual private clouds in my data center that interoperate the exact same functional way? And then why don't I take that VPC and connect it to a system of record? Like, hey, this is the VPC for that VMware owns. This is the VPC that Nutanix owns. This is the VPC that OpenStack owns. And then by interconnecting with those systems, they're the ones that are doing the workload deployments, because that's what they do really well. And why don't I make the network automatically reactive to sensed changes in that environment, even if IP addresses overlap or even if VLANs overlap? That's a solvable problem. Hmm. And if I give you the same operator experience for creating on-premises environments as I give you for creating public cloud environments, and then I give you the same segmentation model, and then I give you the same interconnection security.
Your chances for success have suddenly shot through the roof because it's the same thing.
Easier to succeed, easier to troubleshoot. Mm. Like, again, I can actually do more with less. I don't need to scale my team 4x because somebody decides they want to put things in the public cloud.
Right. Well, speaking of troubleshooting, I think then I want to touch on telemetry, because one of the things that EOS has done a lot with is how to stream telemetry out of the software.
Yeah, I mean, so every instance we're describing here uses GNMI over gRPC, sharing open config models, to live in real-time state stream all of the network state from, now would be every virtual machine, every container, and bring that back to CloudVision as a large centralized time series database cluster that receives this data and then parses it and allows you to kind of go back in time and see what happened at a certain point. Because why is this really relevant? In a container environment, I can reuse the same IP address 4 times in a minute for 4 different workloads doing 4 completely different types of operations. Mm-hmm. Okay, like in 1 6-second increment, it could be doing a database count, writing it out to a Kafka message bus, and shutting down. In the next, it could be literally going to, and by the way, that database could be your core PII GDPR protected mission critical data warehouse. In the next moment, it could be a completely different workload doing, like, serving up web traffic on Nginx to production users coming in from the internet. How the heck does my SIM system react to that? Right. Or when I see this 1 minute and that the next minute, how do I know what is what, and is it authorized to do that? And how do I go back? And if it created a problem, I need to know what container it was running, which workload at which time.
So this means that the IP address is no longer sort of an effective mechanism for the identity and policy that usually gets associated to an IP address.
The IP address used to be like the house I grew up in with my parents, right? Because like they lived there for 20 years. So, and I mean, literally the very first IP address I interacted with in my life was like 204.181.40.2. And I still remember it. Yeah. And it was this Linux host that did all sorts of network services. So go us. And .1 was the gateway. Now that IP address went from like years to months to years with VMs, now down to seconds to minutes with containers. The lifetime shrunk by like 95%. And in that environment, how do I, as a network operator, deal with these ephemeral IP addresses that are rapidly reused? How do I deal with a DevOps team that wants to plug things in and deploy them very rapidly to, you know, as demand increases, they want that elastic experience with demand, you know, expansion and contraction, and they need a network to react to that changing environment. In the public cloud, in the container environment, on the on-premises environment. And so, yeah, we're changing the operating model of our networking infrastructure to be reactive and integrate with these tools, to be reactive to these changes in a very dynamic environment. And then state stream everything back, so you have full visibility and full telemetry. If something does go sideways, which it will, it always does. It's technology. Something's going to break. Right? I mean, like, I'm sorry, but plan for failure, right? It's one of our core design principles. Something will break. So let's design for that rather than, you know, be shocked when it happens.
So you're saying by having the telemetry and all of that data, when something goes wrong, then I have a clue on where to start looking.
Yeah, I mean, I can gather forensics, observability. I mean, imagine over time you could actually create a digital replica of your network in a public cloud where every router or switch was expressed as a container. And then with this digital replica, I could model Greg's changes on route maps. I could model your QoS changes. I could model your policy changes, test them. That's not going to be performant. Okay, the idea is not like I'm not going to run an Ixia against it or something. But the idea is like, are my logical changes I'm inflicting into the topology going to work? Can I actually test a network before I put it in a prod? There's static analysis type tests, which is like IntentionNet and Forward, which are awesome. And I mean, a far cry better than anything we've had in the industry to date. And then the next level is, can I do a test in a staging environment or a simulation environment? And I think we can. The industry is not there yet, but I think that's part of this operating model evolution our clients are in, journey our clients are going on.
So Doug, you mentioned operations earlier, APIs earlier. And I looked at some of the materials you're working with Terraform. There's a Terraform element here. So what happens if a developer or even a network person is using Terraform to spin up all these instantiations of Cloud EOS?
Sure. So we worked with Terraform because it's probably the predominant tool used in the DevOps community for instantiating, you know, your public, declaratively provisioning your public cloud infrastructure. So when you run the Terraform script to spin up all those VPCs, it will talk to Arista CloudVision. It will instantiate the VPCs, and Arista CloudVision will go buy an EOS instance for you using your credentials in the Amazon, Azure, Google Marketplace. When that gold master image boots up, it has zero configuration relevant to you on it. CloudVision will pre-provision it with the appropriate information related to your enterprise. So it has the right logging, the right telemetry feedback, and so on. Then the cool stuff happens. Based on information it knows about the cloud, information it knows from Terraform, we will get in the information about like all the addressing. We'll provision a layer 3 routed VXLAN, BGP connection back to EVPN controllers, IPsec, site discovery, peer discovery, as well as key generation, key distribution, and then over time, key rotation based on traffic volume. We then measure in-band network telemetry from this VPC to all the other VPCs you may have running on-prem in other clouds or cloud-to-cloud. And then we use that to inform dynamic path selection. This lets us make intelligent decisions about, do I take the Equinix Cloud Connect path? Do I take the internet using IPsec? Do I take some sort of private line MPLS network? It lets me choose freely amongst those automatically with QoS metrics that are inclusive of what the actual cost is of that link through the cloud provider. Right. So the billing metrics and billing models of that link are now taking effect in a QoS model. And then automatically scale up capacity within a virtual private cloud at both like the cloud edge connecting out to the rest of the world or between virtual private clouds in a transit capacity. And so now the cool part is, and this kind of leads to the thing I'd ask everybody who watched this, who goes, okay, or listen to this, said, that's really cool. Fred Chu on our team did a great demo of this. And what I want you to do is watch Fred's demo and count how many times he touches that 1980s era 80 by 24 CLI to make network configuration changes to instantiate multiple virtual private clouds and execute this workflow and process. Because that's the key thing. It's great technology, highly reliable, it has cool telemetry, but the workflow that works the way the DevOps team, at the speed the DevOps team needs us to respond while complying with all the things we as network professionals want to happen is the magic. Okay. And so count those CLI commands.
Cool. Well, I'm going to assume we've piqued your interest. So if you want to find out more, we'll have the links to that video that Doug referenced, plus a couple of other links for more information in the show notes, or just hit arista.com to go dig around there. Doug, thank you for joining us and for being back on the show. And we thank Arista Networks for being a sponsor. You can find this and many more fine, free technical podcasts along with our community blog at packetpushers.net. You can follow us on Twitter at packetpushers, find us on LinkedIn, like us on Facebook, and rate us on Apple Podcasts. And last but not least, remember that too much networking would never be enough.